Hi, my name is Nigel Fellows-Freeman and I'm the founder and CEO of Canopy and the host of Building Tomorrow's Insurer. We here at Canopy are a leading embedded insurance platform really focused on helping insurers to kind of build, launch, manage and scale embedded insurance opportunities to customers where and when they need it. I am super, super happy today for episode 4 of Building Tomorrow's Insurer. And today we've got Simone Dossiter, who is the CEO of InsurTech Australia, joining me. They are the leading non-for-profit organization here in Australia, really focused on creating a world-leading InsurTech ecosystem here within Asia and within APAC. And they're really focusing on fostering a really diverse group of startups, as well as corporates, as well as partners all within the association. So I'm expecting some really, really profound insights from her today. She's a massively experienced person with a really deep commercial history within corporate and now kind of in the non-for-profit world. She really brings a real breadth of experience from her days at Munich Re and with ANZIF, and obviously now as the CEO of InsurTech Australia. So really, really looking forward to the conversation. I think Simone, wonderful to see you. Thanks so much for your time. Really looking forward to the conversation.
Kind of look through, look through your history and obviously kind of doing some research on kind of yourself and your background. It's really apparent, I suppose, you've been deep in the industry for a while and been across multiple sectors, really, in terms of kind of obviously in an NFP role right now, but been on the private side, on the commercial side as well. And for me, that really, I guess, signifies a real kind of maybe passion that you have within the industry. And it's shown kind of, I guess, yeah, a real kind of commitment to grow the industry. And so I was just really interested, maybe we could kick off with kind of what was the kind of inspiration behind that? What were kind of just the drive of your passion to be kind of, yeah, such a central, like take such a central role in the insurance industry?
Yeah, look, it's definitely developed over time. You know, it was never intentional kind of, you know, no one sets out to be in this sector. But I think one of the things I really like about the insurance industry is just the people you work with. You know, and I started in the sort of actuarial side, and you've worked with these really, really smart maths people, you know, and all they do around financial modeling. And then, you know, my background, I really studied law. So, you know, I've always been interested in, you know, and the legal profession has such a huge influence on the industry as well. And, you know, some of the sort of really smart lawyers, and then you have these sales, you know, you have to sell the product. It's not a product that sells itself. So you need really interesting marketing and sales, but they all have to work together. It's very much a kind of team sport. And it's a sport, and it's an industry where there's a lot of collaboration. So you do get to meet, and particularly my background as consulting, I worked in sort of operational roles. You get to work with everyone across the business, from the IT to the HR to the underwriting to the sales. And so I guess it's really just been really interesting. And, you know, the customers are always, you know, when you go into your sort of personal life and you say you're in insurance, it's got such a bad reputation. And so I've always looked for ways that you can actually help to improve that and work for companies and people that are looking to improve that. So, yeah, it's kind of gone from there.
Yeah, I love that, and it's so interesting, isn't it? Because the do you have any kind of beliefs in why the insurance industry has grown that kind of reputation? Like, it's something that we hear a bunch, right? It's something that is a real recurrent theme, but the opposite is almost true, which is this: it's force for good. Like, it's this real thing that there is there to support you when things go really wrong, and there to kind of help you. And so, have you got any sense of why that's evolved, like in your experience?
Look, there's a few different things. I think, you know, firstly, these are really big businesses, and you know, it's hard to be a small insurance company. You know, you're not going to get the scale of business, so you end up having lots of different people and teams, and that makes it bureaucratic, or it makes it hard to change and those sorts of things. And also it's not like banking, where, you know, every day you're tapping, you're saving, you're looking at your mobile apps. You know, at most you deal with the insurer once a year. It's always a grudge purchase, and then it's the insurers don't have the incentive to change things, and people don't have the incentive to change. And then when you interact with them more, it's when the worst time in your life, usually. You know, you've had a huge disaster or you've had a life health issue, and you're always at the disadvantage compared to the people on the other end because you only ever do this once and you don't understand the product and you don't understand and everything else is happening, whereas the people you're dealing with are doing this day in, day out, you know, hundreds of times, dealing with lots of people. And so you end up with these, power imbalances, negative reactions. So I think all those things kind of come together and mean that insurance isn't really understood. It is complex. You know, we're selling a promise. There's more that we can do to try and work around it.
That's so interesting, isn't it? Because you're right. I hadn't really thought about that. Well, I thought about it, but I hadn't kind of lined that up before, which is that kind of the emotion, which is the time that it's brought in, like really does 10x. The experience, which is either unbelievably great and you hear people raving about kind of the wonderful experience they've had, but also on the downside, 10x worse, which is a claim doesn't get paid, whatever it is. And so kind of it really does spread to each end of the bell curve, doesn't it, in terms of either being unbelievable or kind of yet having a poor experience, and maybe it doesn't sit in the middle as much. That's a really interesting way to think about it. And you kind of touched on there, I think there's a bunch more we can do and a bunch more that I think that everybody is trying and kind of really cognizant of in terms of how we are. And I guess obviously InsurTech Australia as an organization, I think kind of one of the values, right, is kind of trying to drive the industry forward and connect kind of young companies with kind of different markets. And so, and I know you've been doing a bunch of work globally in terms of kind of Singapore and US and different organizations there. So I'd love to understand, just hear a bit about how that's going. Are you finding you've been able to connect with different folks?
Australia has got a really great ecosystem. It's quite collaborative, but we are at a disadvantage. We're a long way, you know, in terms of physical distance from most markets. We're in the sort of opposite time zone for most markets. There's only a certain size of the insurance sector here. So, you know, we sort of, you know, always say to the insurtechs, they need to be thinking globally. You know, you're not going to be successful and build a big business. It's a kind of quite a concentrated market. So you really need to look at where your product is also in different sectors and which international markets are the right ones for you. And so we think that's something that we can help doing, you know, particularly sort of Austrade and some of the government and international government bodies are really helpful. So it's how do we, you know, the role for us is to help to connect them and to sort of do all that organizing, to develop relationships with some of those international conferences and that sort of amplification as well. So by going to those different markets and being seen within that sort of leading industry, we can build connections to not only those insurance businesses, but we can help them build their brands and help them, really through that journey. So we always get, we got a great reaction in Singapore last year. And I think that was kind of a bit of a kind of wow factor. In the US is a huge market, so it's harder for us and we're kind of further away. But there's definitely some that are really going well in that US market. And then the other that's, you know, a natural market for Australia is the kind of UK, you know, we're one of the largest Lloyd's markets. And so there's already lots of insurtechs that are already sort of established and expanded globally, and that's one that we want to sort of also look at this year as to just such a huge market for insurance and how we can help, but very competitive, so how we can help kind of our insurtechs get those right connections.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And are you seeing in the conversations that you're having obviously, I know there's kind of ITC just a week or so ago, and there was this, I'm sure you'll kind of touch on it, but like this real great sense of this collaboration, especially from Asia, and kind of a swell. And there were some really honest conversations, though, as well, around difficulties in the market, fundraising difficulty. Are you kind of seeing in any of those global conversations you're having is Australia specifically positioned differently to any of those different markets? Do you think everybody's experiencing the same in terms of opportunity and business growth and venture? Like, are you kind of seeing any of that?
Yeah, look, I think we're not hugely different from anyone else. And our insurtechs have similar offerings. I think we have some advantages and disadvantages from our distance. So it is hard if you're an Australian founder to raise money. You do at some point need to move to those markets. And to get your kind of brand, you know, out there. I think we're well respected, particularly in the US. We're seen as being very genuine and not overselling, and those sort of things are sort of valued. And I think because a lot of our businesses have to kind of bootstrap, you know, and rely, they're already sort of probably well established before they're going into those markets. Yeah, but it's interesting. I think there's different sectors, and you know, the UK Europe environment is quite different to the kind of VC US environment, and you hear sort of different things. And then Asia is different again. I mean, there's huge. Some of the Asian insurtech businesses, the growth profile is just phenomenal. But it's a trickier market for us from language and regulation and so on.
Yeah, it's interesting. I thought that was one of the kind of really interesting things that came out in the conversations. That was Australian businesses are forced to be capital efficient, and because you're capital constraint, and so it's almost kind of in your DNA to find a way and to kind of be capital efficient and to grow a little more organically and buy a little bit less growth, etc. And so I guess the change in macro environment isn't quite as what's the word I'm looking for? Isn't quite as kind of aggressive, because we've kind of been used to a little bit more of that environment before. And it's not like the funding's gone from loads to tiny. It's kind of the difference changes a little bit, some are similar. I thought that was a really interesting kind of theme that came from the conference last week.
Yeah, and I mean, we also talked to sort of other tech sectors, you know, so fintech and regtech and those sort of areas. And I think in that sense, while we're feeling some of that, and we feel some, you know, hear some of the messaging of particularly the US ones that haven't gone as well, but I think compared to things like, you know, buy now, pay later or credit, you know, insurance is still, you know, it's quite a solid, still going to be there. It's going to be a long, you know, we're not seeing probably the mass layoffs and changes in business models yet, and I'm probably not expecting to see it that you see in other sectors, because, yeah, you still need insurance, claims are going to be paid. If anything, that just puts more pressure to automate and cost savings. You know, the insurers are always looking for opportunities, and that's where technology is one of the solutions.
It's one of the solutions, and those kind of solutions are often at odds with regulation in some way, in terms of sometimes technology and innovation moves a bit quicker than the regulatory bodies do, and I think that's natural, because as they should be, conservative and thoughtful and see how things play out before changing regulation, etc. But how do you what are you seeing in that world of you kind of see both ends, right? You're kind of very involved with the regulators on a the association level, but also with the young companies that are trying to maybe sit outside regulation or kind of test the boundaries of it. And so how do you see that? Like, kind of how are you seeing the regulators and startups kind of work together? Just really interested in your perspective.
Yeah, I think the regulators do want, they want to provide that opportunity. You know, they have initiatives to engage with the sector. But naturally, the default is going to be, you know, APRA is going to deal firstly with the big insurers because they're the mass of the market. So it's trying to be involved in that conversation and understand what the implications for some of those things are, and how we, you know, can try and, you know, we're not primarily a policy advocacy body. You know, some associations that do that, we see that, you know, where relevant, we'll do that, but probably our focus is around helping them on that journey. And then there are others that do just kind of do their own thing, and they're just looking for, you know, the opportunities to really develop a new and different product, and then almost sort of check back in and see whether or how it fits in that environment. They need to kind of do that, but you are always going to come back to that sort of regulatory framework. In some ways, Australia's, you know, quite, you know, highly regulated, and so that gives us some advantages in that you have to get used to, it's part of your DNA as you start up, and then, you know, there might be less regulation in other areas when you expand.
Are you seeing there's any kind of, in particular, any areas, I guess kind of AI is maybe one that's kind of super topical, right? But is there any kind of areas of kind of technological change that you're kind of seeing as maybe kind of stacking up to be kind of big challenges for the startups and regulators to work together on?
Yeah, I mean, I think AI is certainly one. I mean, I think people are doing different things. There's different levels of what really is AI. I think regulators are concerned around, you know, how it's put together, you know, the ethical kind of issues around it and making sure that, you know, we're not kind of inbuilding problems down the end. So I think there's probably more of a conversation. And if anything, there's probably going to be more regulation at some point. So I think we just need to kind of understand what that means and really, I guess, demonstrate the value and not be sort of black boxes and things. You know, cyber and security is always kind of topical. And, you know, as, you know, the value chain gets bigger, you know, the insurtechs and the tech companies are now kind of captured by more of that where they maybe weren't in the past. So that's and then the others is probably around, you know, what's happening around advice. You know, there was a lot of changes a few years ago around, you know, the Royal Commission. We've just had the quality of advice review. And I think it's for the, you know, and often when I talk to the newer insurtechs that aren't out of insurance, for them to understand, well, actually, you're going to need to think about who's got your ASIC license and how that fits. And, you know, there's quite a big upskilling for them of you can't just go out and kind of sell the product.
No, yeah, hard. There's lots of value chain's important and protecting customers, right, which is the end of the most important thing at the end of the day, which is what it's there for. It's and like when you just kind of mentioned kind of startups coming from maybe different areas outside of insurance and kind of playing like coming into the insurance space, and I suppose they come from kind of, yeah, associated often, but not kind of specifically insurtech. And I imagine there's associations and bodies that kind of support those companies. Is InsurTech Australia as an entity kind of, I guess, foster relationships with those kind of different associations and bodies over time? Is that like a plan you do now or something you'd like kind of plan to do, continue to build or?
Yeah, so we have some good relationships. We've just last year kind of launched a thing called the Tech Collective with sort of a loose grouping with RegTech and FinTech and some of the like ACS and Stone & Chalk and really just and particularly the Tech Council to sort of say, well, what is the overall, you know, what's happening and can we provide one voice, so particularly to government, and they're, you know, have changes around, you know, things like talent and employment, and they don't want to talk to 16 different tech associations managing startups. So if we can go with one voice in some of those topics, you know, and collaborate on those activities. But yeah, we do cross into other things. There's things like, you know, some of them become almost like prop techs, and then some of them are more like health techs. So there's kind of huge variety. So you do need to really know enough to be able to kind of plug the right people into the right places.
Yeah. And how has it been for you in terms of coming from, I guess, kind of your Munich Re life and kind of ANZIF and all those kind of things and your like commercial life and then coming into, I'm not sure, I think this might be your kind of first like association type role, and I'm sure it's a change. I'm sure it's different. Like, how's it been for you? Like, how's, yeah, how have you found it?
Yeah, look, it's a lot of, I always say to people, it's a lot of fun. Like, you just get to talk to really interesting people, lots of different people, and everything you're doing is really valuable. You're making connections, you're, you know, introducing people to different ideas. And whereas in some of the corporate jobs I've done, I'd spent a lot of time kind of restructuring and managing transformation and, you know, managing change, and that can be a bit a bit tiring after a while. So, you know, that's everything we're doing is really around, you know, how do we make things better, and how do we, you know, the conversations we have with the insurers are all about those kind of, you know, innovation and those kind of things. I mean, probably the biggest challenge is, you know, resources in a small team. You don't have that, and you very much rely on, you know, the connections you have from your members and partners. So, you know, you can push a certain agenda, but if it's not on their agenda, then you have to sort of switch focus. But yeah, it's lots of interesting, and then you get the sort of international travel. And, you know, one of the other things is we have sort of a network with the other international associations kind of globally, so, you know, that'll introduce people who are coming into Australia, and if someone's going to the other markets, we connect them as well. So it gives you that, yeah, interesting global kind of, you know, very much a high level view of things. Yeah.
Sounds so diverse. Almost like a startup founder in terms of like any kind yeah. of leader, I suppose. There's just a massive diversity of I imagine through the day you kind of can speak to a young company and then speak to somebody about investing and then another global association about a partnership and then organizing an event. I can imagine the day is massively diverse each day.
Yeah, it is. And you have to, you know, sometimes you're having conversation with life reinsurers on, you know, some particular product topic and you need to know enough to be able to, and then, you know, you're talking about motor, you know, claims loss process. And, you know, so you have to sort of really jump around and, you know, you don't get to spend that long with any one company because you're trying to balance across all of them, but you're just trying to capture enough of what they're doing. And they change. That's the other thing that's really, that's what I really like. But every time you talk to one of the startups and then 6 months later they'll pitch and you're like, hang on, that's like a completely different pitch. So you do need to kind of keep what they're doing because, you know, I thought you had a claims platform. Now you've got like a compliance platform. Okay, well, that's good. But, yeah, making sure you have got them in the right.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And how has it been? How has it been kind of as a female leader in the industry? Obviously, there's we're kind of trying to make sure that we are speaking to a bunch of kind of really interesting kind of females in the industry, bringing their perspectives on how you've grown and how you've found it today, how you've kind of grown in terms of your experience, and also kind of how you think it's playing forward and changing over time. I'd love to understand kind of your experience as a female in the industry. I know having Sam at speaking last week at the conference was really great. As I think she spoke so wonderfully. I was just super interested in your experience.
Yeah, I mean that's why we wanted to bring her because we think she brings it's not a voice that everyone or not a message everyone necessarily wants to hear, but does it in a really great way. Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting. I mean, when I kind of started, I was at uni and it was, we had 50, I did law, so it was kind of 50-50 gender. And then as I kind of got into the workforce, it was always sort of, I was the one executive one female executive in the room. And, particularly when I sort of, my kids were quite young, I was the only one sort of doing drop-offs or managing with, both my husband both had sort of careers, everyone else had, the wife at home or, the wife was a school teacher or they didn't sort of have to manage that. So that has changed. I think that has changed in that, not usually just one in the room, at least that you're starting to get more in the room. And, I think guys are kind of saying, well, actually, no, I want to also be involved at home. And, the pandemic was kind of interesting around that. I think it's really around, particularly some of the bigger organisations, a lot of their effort can be just around quite early stage, not tokenistic, but how they appear rather than necessarily doing some of the hard work. And, it is kind of hard, in the conference we wanted to make sure we had a good balance of, because it's just not an interesting conversation if you have four of the same people with the same background on stage. But you do have to work harder to make sure you get that balance because, you're also trying to keep sponsors happy and you're trying to, make sure it's within your right base. So you do have to sort of, work harder to get that result, but it's kind of worth it.
Very worth it. Do you think there's anything else we can do as an industry to kind of drive greater diversity? Like I definitely feel responsibility as an owner, as part of a company to make it like taking personal responsibility. But is there kind of anything that you kind of think kind of diversity and inclusion can be encouraged or like any thoughts that you have around how we can continue to and that's not just on gender, by the way, that's kind of culturally and ethnicity, like kind of real diversity more broadly.
Yeah, look, I think it's just about creating that awareness and mindset and, get everyone to that point where, and recently I was looking at one of the other, associations newsletter. And when I looked at it, I just went, this whole newsletter has white middle-aged men in it. They were the ones pitching, they were the ones in the judging panel. And that was the first thing I looked at. We need to get to a point where everyone looks at that. And obviously all great guys who were doing this, but they just didn't have that mindset. Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of creating, because, you know, I'm sure if you spoke to them, they would be just as committed as you know, we all are, of how we bring that mm-hmm. diversity. But until they look at everything they do through that lens, you know, they're not going to make that extra effort to then, you know, because there would be, you know, females who could be the judges or pitchers or, you know, be involved. And so it's just making that extra, just switching that kind of mindset. And I think it's just getting people to kind of, once you realize, you kind of sort of can't not realize. But it's just whatever that point is that you sort of look around and go, whoa, you know, we're all white, Anglo, middle-aged people on this, you know, whether we might have women and men, but, you know, does this represent the broader community? And, yeah, finding other opportunities to kind of change that.
Yes, because I'm trying to think of who I listened to a previous podcast, and it was talked a little bit about inspiration, and it was talking a little bit around you really only need one person to be able to kind of be aspirational to, because it shows it can be done. And so one organization or one company or et cetera kind of can kind of make an individual contribution, which kind of shows it can be done, I suppose. And then that can maybe continue to shine a light on kind of how it can be done. It's possible. It's hard. You have to work at it. And then I'm sure there's compromises that have to be made, but that's kind of part of change,
worth,
I suppose.
Yeah, it's worth it. And it's changed their mindset not to think, well, okay, I don't have four CEOs. Well, do you need to have four CEOs? And the benefit you get from having different people far outweighs the benefit of seeing those four CEOs.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Was there any kind of we touched a little bit on ITC there. I'd love to, the event last week, maybe just touch on, is there any kind of great highlights that you wanted to touch on? Anything kind of, how did it go? How did you find it? The room was overflowing. It was wonderful to see so many people, like in terms of so many people turn up and in terms of a growth from last year, growth of members, growth of corporates. It was really wonderful to see. But I'd love to hear how you kind of felt it went.
Yeah, no, we were really pleased. I mean, a lot of effort goes into it in the background. And, you know, often we say to people, you know, we're a member association. This is our event. We're not a private company that's doing it for profit. But I think having delivered it so successfully last year, we were much, you know, we got great sponsors and really great commitment, you know, from them early on, which was really made it, you know, a great success. And, yeah, we'd got to the point where, you know, we'd sold every seat in the room, and then we'd sold 50 more seats. And I'm like, oh, and I was still getting, you know, we still had people on the wait list, and I was getting people approach me personally and say, you know, I was meant to, and they were partners. And like, we had to really just say, like, no, this is kind of health and safety. So it was, you know, I was glad that it was busy, but not kind of dangerous, you know, that people kind of came and went. And I think that's a good buzz. The things that, so for me, one of the things was so we partnered with ITC and did the pitch event. And, you know, sometimes pitches, people aren't, they get a bit bored and they're not really interested. So I wasn't sure how that would go. But, yeah, we got great feedback. You know, the room was, you know, people were really, really interested. And there was a good variety. And I had a number of people say, oh, I didn't realize they were doing this. Can we talk to them? So I think it was also sort of a good opportunity for the people who got to, you know, we did get more than we could show on the day. So it's definitely something I'd do again. And, you know, how do you have that sort of opportunity? And then I think just having the balance of, you know, there's obviously a lot of interest in those investors and the fundraising in that environment, to sort of hear that conversation and what it mean locally. And, you know, we try to, you know, one, showcase the members and partners, but also provide some insight, so it's not just kind of, you know, a demo session and people just talking about how good they are. So I think that came across, you know, and then it's always about the networking. Insurance is a people, you know, a lot of it's about personal connections. So just having that opportunity, you know, the one event of the year that everyone comes to.
Yeah, I think that for me, that one of the things that really stood out was what you just mentioned there, which was it was very natural conversation. It didn't feel like the everyone that was talking had an agenda. It wasn't very often that people even mentioned companies. It was like very focused on kind of talking about like topical things and opinions on it and how we should be thinking about it and how it's impacting, and much less of this is our company and this is what we do. And so I think that made it very engaging.
I mean, there's always a bit of that. I mean, everyone is ultimately there to sort of sell their company, but it's counterproductive just to do it as a straight sale. And that's why I guess it was interesting that the pictures that are a kind of sale were so well received. So, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. And kind of staying on that theme of InsurTech Australia, obviously there's learning kind of there's been some really good growth in the membership, and both on the corporate side, and obviously there's a growth in partnership globally as well as on the membership side. I'm just really interested to learn from you on where have you got a vision for InsurTech Australia, where like how do you think it's progressing over the next few years? What are the plans? Love to hear them.
Yeah, I mean, we very much want to grow. That's kind of our, you know, we want our members, you know, mm-hmm. and our InsurTechs to be successful. And we also want to grow our connections. I was recently sort of looking at the actually RACT's mission, and their mission, you know, is to have a connection with everybody in Tasmania. And I thought, wow, that's kind of quite a big goal. And I sort of thought that's almost what, you know, I want to have a connection. Now, they may not all be members, but a connection with every company in the insurance business so that they know who we are, they know what we do.
Love it.
And we've got that, you know, and ideally, you know, whether they're, you know, ideally they're members or partners, but they're engaging with us, because I think the more that we connect with, then the more that we can achieve things together. And then, yeah, it helps, you know, us as an association, you know, we're funded from our members and partners, and we can do more things, and we can have a sort of a better global footprint. So it's, you know, it's more of that, you know, keep doing what we've done, which works well, you know, but just having the opportunity as, you know, it's probably now 5 years that some of the InsurTechs have been going. So they've matured. They're kind of big businesses now, and that their role kind of changes. We're not all just dealing with a little startup. So, you know, how do we mature in terms of our engagement with them and what they're doing the rest of the industry as well?
Yeah, love it. Is there, talking about a little bit about that around kind of some of the big end companies and maybe some smaller ones. And one of the things that came, I've been seeing a little bit in kind of being spoken about is a bit about M&A and kind of being fundraising with a bit tighter. There's a bit more kind of potentially M&A with some of the, broadly across the industry. Have you been hearing about any of that? Is that something that you're kind of getting a sense of, or is it kind of a bit more rumor mill and less action?
Yeah, I haven't seen too many that have come to fruition as yet, sort of in the last sort of 12 months. Mm. But, yeah, there's definitely been discussion about it. So whether there's, you know, activity in the background and it just kind of hasn't sort of flowed through. I mean, I would expect at points, you know, you'll definitely see the insurers buying the InsurTechs, you know, and some of that I think is just about them waiting for the right, you know, which are the right partners, and as they approve their business models. You know, that's a logical kind of progression for them, is to kind of buy some of these successful businesses rather than to try and develop themselves. I think we'll see. But we keep seeing new ones, you know, we also keep seeing new ones come in, you know, and actually we're now starting to see people come out of InsurTechs and building their own InsurTechs, which I think is just fascinating. So they've kind of seen what the founders have done, and they're
wonderful.
Like, well, I can build my own business. It'll be even better than that one that just started 5 years ago. So you're like, wow, that's really cool.
Really cool. Yeah, very, very cool. Obviously, the theme for the kind of the pod is talking about the future insurer and all the components of that. Like, if you kind of portray, like, look into the future a little bit, and whatever that kind of time window is, whether that's 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, like, how do you kind of, what do you think about, what does that future insurance business look like for you? Do you have any kind of thoughts? Do you think there are any differences? Many similarities, I imagine, because it's a business that's been around for a long time, been in a similar structure for a very long time. And so, yeah, just interested in how you think we'll continue to evolve as the insurer will continue to evolve into the future.
Yeah, I almost think in a way that they'll get smaller as biz, you know, particularly if you think about the big carriers, primary carriers, that they'll almost get smaller because it won't make sense for them to do all these things in the value chain. which you know, maybe they did 100 years ago. And with the technology, you know, the ability to integrate with different businesses and to get the best kind of connections to, whether that's procurement and different people in the supply chain or, you know, different distribution opportunities. So I think it'll be very much about insurers working out, well, what is their key specialization and which of the things make them themselves, and then others, you know, very much sort of outsourcing those businesses and, you know, picking the best in breed, whether that's, you know, Australian or globally. I mean, it has to get more digital because, you know, the generation that's coming is not going to put up with, you know, some of this, you know, PDS forms that you fill in and they go nowhere. You know, it's not really digital. You know, it has to get kind of a lot more faster and integrated. So, yeah, that's not even a question, really. It's more around, yeah, how that looks like. And, you know, I think, you know, we'll probably also move away from insurance brands being, you know, this strong loyalty to, you know, we used to have the motor clubs, you know, people have this strong loyalty. I think they'll sit more and more in the background and you'll buy, you know, this why embedded is, I think so. Because people, you're not really ever interested in, you know, it's like, do you know who carries your Poland Wise energy companies? Well, maybe I'm with Origin, maybe I'm with, you know, you don't really care. So you're buying your product through other relationships, and that's going to be even stronger with a, you know, this new generation that's all kind of, you know, online and everything's kind of that as a starting point. Why would you go direct to the end?
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? And customer, I think we've seen it. I think we've seen it play out so strongly in other industries, especially in financial services. You kind of seen kind of those embedded services be so effective and kind of the customer happiness be so great in terms of them being in one place and getting multiple services. It does feel like it's a really logical step. And maybe just to think about maybe the short term. Do you have any, I know we're in kind of end of Feb now, and so making a prediction for the year feels a little bit like we should have done this 6 weeks ago. But do you have any thoughts for any predictions for the year in terms of things that may happen that you would love to happen? Yeah, I'd love to hear them if you have any. I'll put you on the spot a little bit here, so sorry.
Look, I'm an optimist. I'm naturally an optimist. So I do think that the VC environment will turn around fairly quickly. You know, I think there's money, you know, there's money out there. It's just about the right opportunities. And I think that stuff can turn pretty quickly. And I think, you know, as seen from just the interest in, you know, in attending our event, in, you know, the events I went to kind of globally, I know the event in London has sold out. I think the insurers are realizing that they just have to do this. So I think that's going to bring a momentum and, you know, around, you know, all those activities. And of course, we're still going to have, you know, natural catastrophes and regulatory change, which is going to kind of distract them. I think we're going to see that continued momentum, and that helps build, you know, customers for all those technical businesses and for all those different business models. I think, you know, people are getting more comfortable with, okay, well, what is a parametric product, and, you know, things that have been around for a while that can sort of plug some of those gaps.
Absolutely love it. I agree. I'm in your camp of optimism. I think if we wish a bunch to happen and 25 or 50% of it happens, then I think that's a really good thing. And so, yeah, I definitely feel that optimism. I definitely feel that momentum. We've seen it kind of at our end in terms of kind of people that we're speaking with, et cetera. We've seen that momentum actually really shift from kind of like Q4 into Q1. And so I think we're kind of seeing that on the ground a wee bit, when you just spoke around that momentum. So, I'm with you. Thank you so much for today. Thank you so much for your time and all of the, speak for all of the, I suppose, the members of InsurTech Australia. I know everyone's super grateful for everything you do. Often it's one of those things that not everything gets seen. So much work gets done behind the scenes except for the things that happen. So a massive thank you for everything you do there, and I'm kind of wish InsurTech Australia well, I guess, over the coming months and years, in terms of its touching every insurance business. I love that as a vision, and so good luck with it, and look forward to speaking in the future.
Thank you, Nigel. It was great conversations, all things I love talking about. And I just, a call out and a thank you to my team, to Anna and Carolyn, who do everything in the background, and our board as well. It's we couldn't do it with all of them. So, it's very much a team effort.
Wonderful. Well, have a wonderful rest of your day, and see you around the traps.
You're right. You too. Thanks, Nigel.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I really enjoyed it. The conversation flowed. We had some really wonderful insights on the industry, what life is like as a female in the industry, and maybe what the future insurer is going to look like. So I hope everyone got as much value from it as I did. To watch the video version of the episode, make sure you do head over to our YouTube channel. The link will be in the description below. And if you'd like to hear any more information or any kind of more episodes from us from industry leaders who are really pushing the boundaries within the insurance space, make sure you do check out our other episodes of our podcast series of Building Tomorrow's Insurer. Follow all of our content, Twitter, LinkedIn, all the normal socials. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day, and look forward to having your company on next conversation.